The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Part 2, The Yoga of Integral Knowledge, Chapter 20, The Lower Triple Purusha, page 457. Such is the constituent principle of the various worlds of cosmic existence and the various planes of our being. They are as if a ladder plunging down into matter, and perhaps below it, rising up into the heights of the spirit, even perhaps to the point at which existence escapes out of cosmic being into ranges of a supracosmic absolute. So at least it is averred in the world system of the Buddhists. But to our ordinary materialized consciousness, all this does not exist because it is hidden from us by our preoccupation with our existence in a little corner of the material universe and with the petty experiences of the little hour of time, which is represented by our life in a single body upon this earth. To that consciousness, the world is a mass of material things and forces thrown into some kind of shape and harmonized into a system of regulated movements by a number of fixed, self-existent laws which we have to obey, by which we are governed and circumscribed, and of which we have to get the best knowledge we can so as to make the most of this one brief existence, which begins with birth, ends with death, and has no second recurrence. Our own being is a sort of accident, or at least a very small and minor circumstance in the universal life of matter, or the eternal continuity of the workings of material force. Somehow or other, a soul, or mind, has come to exist in a body, and it stumbles about among things and forces which it does not very well understand, at first preoccupied with the difficulty of managing to live in a dangerous and largely hostile world, and then with the effort to understand its laws and use them so as to make life as tolerable or as happy as possible, so long as it lasts. If we were really nothing more than such a minor movement of individualized mind in matter, existence would have nothing more to offer us. Its best part would be at most the struggle of an ephemeral intellect and will with eternal matter, and with the difficulties of life supplemented and eased by a play of imagination, and by the consoling fictions presented to us by religion and art, and all the wonders dreamed of by the brooding mind and restless fancy of man. But because he is a soul, and not merely a living body, man can never for long remain satisfied that this first view of his existence, the sole view justified by the external and objective facts of life, is the real truth, or the whole knowledge. His subjective being is full of hints and inklings of realities beyond. It is open to the sense of infinity and immortality. It is easily convinced of other worlds, higher possibilities of being, larger fields of experience for the soul. Science gives us the objective truth of existence and the superficial knowledge of our physical and vital being. But we feel that there are truths beyond which possibly, through the cultivation of our subjective being and the enlargement of its powers, may come to lie more and more open to us. When the knowledge of this world is ours, we are irresistibly impelled to seek for the knowledge of other states of existence beyond. And that is the reason why an age of strong materialism and skepticism is always followed by an age of occultism, of mystical creeds, of new religions, and profounder seekings after the infinite and the divine. The knowledge of our superficial mentality and the laws of our bodily life is not enough. It brings us always to all that mysterious and hidden depth of subjective existence below and behind, of which our surface consciousness is only a fringe or an outer court. We come to see that what is present to our physical senses is only the material shell of cosmic existence. And what is obvious in our superficial mentality is only the margin of immense continents which lie behind unexplored. To explore them must be the work of another knowledge than that of physical science or of a superficial psychology. Religion is the first attempt of man to get beyond himself and beyond the obvious and material facts of his existence. Its first essential work is to confirm and make real to him his subjective sense of an infinite on which his material and mental being depends, and the aspiration of his soul to come into its presence and live in contact with it. Its function is to assure him, too, of that possibility of which he has always dreamed, but of which his ordinary life gives him no assurance, the possibility of transcending himself and growing out of bodily life and mortality into the joy of immortal life and spiritual existence. It also confirms in him the sense that there are worlds or planes of existence other than that in which his lot is now cast. Worlds in which this mortality and this subjection to evil and suffering are not the natural state, but rather bliss of immortality is the eternal condition. Incidentally, it gives him a rule of mortal life by which he shall prepare himself for immortality. He is a soul and not a body, and his earthly life is a means by which he determines the future conditions of his spiritual being. So much is common to all religions. Beyond this, we get from them no assured certainty. Their voices vary. Some tell us that one life on earth is all we have in which to determine our future existence, deny the past immortality of the soul, and assert only its future immortality, threaten it even with the incredible dogma of a future of eternal suffering for those who miss the right path, while others, more large and rational, affirm successive existences by which the soul grows into the knowledge of the infinite, with a complete assurance for all of ultimate arrival and perfection. Some present the infinite to us as a being other than ourselves, with whom we can have personal relations. Others as an impersonal existence into which our separate being has to merge. Some therefore give us as our goal world beyond, in which we dwell in the presence of the divine. Others, a cessation of world existence by emergence in the infinite. Most invite us to bear or to abandon earthly life as a trial, or a temporary affliction, or a vanity, and fix our hopes beyond. In some, we find a vague hint of a future triumph of the spirit, the divine in the body, upon this earth, in the collective life of man, and so justify not only the separate hope and aspiration of the individual, but the united and sympathetic hope and aspiration of the race. Religion, in fact, is not knowledge, but a faith and aspiration. It is justified indeed both by an imprecise intuitive knowledge of large spiritual truths and by the subjective experience of souls that have risen beyond the ordinary life. But in itself, it only gives us the hope and faith by which we may be induced to aspire to the intimate possession of the hidden tracts and larger realities of the spirit. That we turn always the few distinct truths and the symbols or the particular discipline of a religion into hard and fast dogmas is a sign that as yet we are only infants in the spiritual knowledge and are yet far from the science of the infinite. Yet behind every great religion, behind, that is to say, its exoteric side of faith, hope, symbols, scattered truths, and limiting dogmas, there is an esoteric side of inner spiritual training and illumination by which the hidden truths may be known, worked out, possessed. Behind every exoteric religion, there is an esoteric yoga, an intuitive knowledge to which its faith is the first step. Inexpressible realities of which its symbols are the figured expression. A deeper sense for its scattered truths, mysteries of the higher planes of existence of which even its dogmas and superstitions are crude hints and indications. What science does for our knowledge of the material world, replacing first appearances and uses by the hidden truths and as yet occult powers of its great natural forces, and in our own minds beliefs and opinions by verified experience and a profounder understanding, yoga does for the higher planes and worlds and possibilities of our being, which are aimed at by the religions. Therefore, all this mass of graded experience existing behind closed doors to which the consciousness of man may find, if it wills, the key falls within the province of a comprehensive yoga of knowledge, which need not be confined to the seeking after the absolute alone, or the knowledge of the divine in itself, or of the divine only in its isolated relations with the individual human soul. It is true that the consciousness of the absolute is the highest reach of the yoga of knowledge, and that the possession of the divine is its first, greatest, and most ardent object, and that to neglect it for an inferior knowledge is to afflict our yoga with inferiority or even frivolity, and to miss or fall away from its characteristic object. But the divine in itself being known, the yoga of knowledge may well embrace also the knowledge of the divine in its relations with ourselves and the world on the different planes of our existence. To rise to the pure self being steadfastly held to as the summit of our subjective self-uplifting, we may, from that height, possess our lower selves, even to the physical, and the workings of nature which belong to them. This chapter to be continued to its completion with the next reading on page 461.